Well, thank you very much. After we end around 3, we have the room until 4, so stay in talk, get some of the material. You don't have to be out of here until 4.
What are we doing, Rob?
Okay, at this point, we're going to have the questions on steps 1, 2, and 3 that you all have the option of writing. Now, raise your hands. There we go. Sorry. Raise your hands. We'll call you, and someone will answer.
Hopefully.
You want to take... Okay. Somebody stand up.
John, you talked about controlled eating versus abstinence. Can you talk a little bit more?
Sure, I'll repeat it. She was asking about controlled eating versus abstinence. Well, for me, it has always been about, am I the one who's in control? You know, the ironic thing is, in a way, controlled eating is really not me not being in control. I was saying it earlier, that there's foods I can eat and I can commit to and I like. There's certain foods I really like and I enjoy them and I look forward to them, but when I'm eating them, I'm not thinking about when am I going to have them some more, or when can I have it, or can I play games and do this with it to get more. And there are foods that I do that with, and I needed to somehow accept that these are foods I really should stay away from. The joke I've always made is that with those red light, yellow light, green light foods, that I know what my red light ones are, I know what my green light ones are, and my 90% of my yellow light foods are actually red light foods that I'm going, no, don't take them away. When it comes to traffic lights, I'm hitting the accelerator trying to run through the intersection. And I just, the more I can come into acceptance of this is a food I really can't eat without controlled eating, I can put it on that red light list, and I've had to do that recently with a couple of foods, in particular some of the bread products I used to be able to eat, and I just can't. And part of me doesn't want to admit that. And over the years, my foods have changed. Foods I used to be able to eat bread without a problem, and now I can't. And it just has to do with your age, metabolism. The amount of food I eat at my age is not what it was when I came into OA, and it really pisses me off because I used to be able to eat a lot more food, and I can't. And I just have to say, once you put down you get abstinent, you have the same decision that everybody in the world has. How much you want to eat, how much you want to weigh. And for me today, I want to be abstinent because I know that when I'm abstinent, I put the food down, the meal's over. I'm not thinking about it. But when I'm doing controlled eating, it goes on in my head long after the meal's over. So.
I thank you all for sharing. So we're powerless over food. Do any of you live with somebody who's not powerless over food? And is there, how do you deal with something like that?
You mean a normal person?
Yeah. Yes. Well,
okay. Only her.
Yeah, my husband is a normal person with food. He's got other things, but he is a normal person with food. I think if I'd gotten married earlier, it would have really bothered me. My first sponsor, I was a secretary with my first sponsor. We used to work in the same place, and we used to serve food, and she had problems with, serving the drinks, and I had problems with serving the sweets. And she used to tell me, you have as much business eating the sweets as you do the proposal that's on your desk. They're both the same thing for you. So when I look at my husband, he goes, if only these cakes came a little smaller. All these servings are too big. I'm like, just shut up. Who was I just telling? I was telling someone, we stopped by at a coffee place right now. And I had just had lunch before coming here. And he got an individual pizza. And they put it down in front of him. And I'm not hungry. I'm not a pizza person. I just got done saying I'm a sugar person. And I said, but that's so small. And he's like, no, this is plenty. It's like I speak German, he speaks Japanese. It's none of my business. And sometimes I kiss him and he's had chocolate and I can taste the chocolate and I'm like, oh, crap. And then I go and have a piece of sugar-free chocolate. What he's having, it doesn't bother me. I look at it longingly, but it's never an option to touch it because I will lose everything that I have for one bite, and I don't want to do that.
Thank you.
Hi, Bridget from Hospital Reed, the vendor.
Hey, Bridget.
My question is OA a lifetime commitment? Will I be in OA for the rest of my life?
I think that it's one day at a time.
Yeah.
And one day at a time can become, I think in the 12th step of the OA 12 and 12 talks about one day becomes a week. I call my food in every day, and the guy that I call my food into, Ken, is real good with just today. Like today is Saturday. Memorial Day is Monday, that's Monday. But today is just Saturday. So all we have to do, and to those of you who feel overwhelmed, is just do it today. Just talk to somebody today. And I think it's a lot easier and see what life brings. My experience is that the more I do that, the better my life has gotten.
I just love what I'll just do. I heard somebody say once, they asked their sponsor, how long do I have to keep coming to OA? And they said, just until you want to come to OA, and then you don't have to come to OA anymore. So, and for me, it's my medicine, and I don't go to the program the way I did when I first came in. I was going to a lot more meetings. But it's my maintenance. And, you know, diabetes people don't say, you know, 20 years down the line, well, I've been taking insulin for 20 years, that's enough. You know, and it certainly beats the alternative for me.
Yeah, I have something to say. Sorry. And I've often dreamed, I ask myself, if it was a magical pill that were to be discovered, then you would take it and your metabolism would shift. I could eat whatever I wanted and never gain weight. Would I ever want to go back to OA? And I can honestly say yes, because the weight past a certain point stops becoming an issue. What all of us are talking about after 20 years is the your head. That does not stop with body. At first, it's food and body. The minute that's not an issue, it's going to go to work. It's going to go to what your grocery list. This is something for which there's no cure short of lobotomy. And I think
that might not work either.
Yeah. I think that, yes, you're going to take your weight off. But past that, you're going to discover that this is the only place that this stops spinning fast. And no amount of weight loss will address that. The roots will.
Besides, if they had a magic pill, I'd just get hooked on magic pills.
Yes.
Next case.
Next. Arlene.
Thank you so much. It was great to hear all of you. I've always heard you're either going for the food or you're going for God. And I would just like to hear a little more about that. How do you make that shift if you believe that? I've been here 26 years. I get that to be true. So.
Yeah.
Arlene would like us to comment on the statement that she'd heard that you're going for food or you're going for God. And I think it says it simply. For me, you know, and these folks have talked about, or, you know, John did and Seppi talked about, an alcoholic has it, you know, easier because it's black and white. You know, you put it down, we have to take the tiger out of the cage. I don't agree with that. Because I have a sponsor that taught me that I had to identify. Mm-hmm. He said, Ira, you drink coffee, you drink diet soft drinks, you drink tea, you don't drink what's poison to you. It's the same with the food. Mm-hmm. That's how I learned it. Here's the thing. I do believe that, I don't like to think about it as either or. I also, that same sponsor told me that God is not putting me to a test. God is saying, do what you want, because God gives us free will. You know, I can do whatever I want as long as I'm willing to pay the price for it. Up until I came in here, I did things but didn't want to pay for it. He also told me this. He said, and Seppi alluded to it earlier, that if I want what you have and I'm not willing to do the work you did to get it, it's the philosophy of a thief. And so the point is, it's not so much food or God, it's when I'm eating, who do I become? You know, and because my food isn't perfect. There is no perfect. There's no such thing as perfect. So it's hopefully, and the way God works for me, it's that voice in my head, for instance, when I was at the conference, it's, you know, want to get into it, and it says, don't do it. Mm. And I think we all, once you're here, you experience that. Or, you know what, Ira? You got to take care of something here. And it's that little pause before you take the action that has made all the difference.
That's good. Anyone else?
Hi, this is for the gentleman. I've noticed that people in programs that work multiple programs have a lot of recovery. Do you find that, well, why do you think that is? Also, how do you approach sponsorship and working the steps when you have multiple programs?
Well, she said for the gentleman, so I'm out.
I'm out.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody who's in got both programs and was asking me how I handled it. I go to less AA meetings than I used to because I do have 31 years, and I, to my way of thinking, if I think of my sobriety slash abstinence, and the two are intertwined as far as I'm concerned. The outer rampart of my fort is the food. I'm going to eat before I ever drink, I think. And I also know that if I'm doing and I'm working these steps, it's going to be a lot harder for my disease to get in. You know, I was saying today this morning that, you know, it's hard for newcomers to get the idea why we talk so much about the steps and about our character defects. But that's the side door our disease uses to get in, to get us to relapse. Through any of those things, and I know if I'm working on all this stuff, it's the key. I go to less meetings. I had a sponsor for a long time. He's gotten to be sort of, you know, he's old, yeah. And when I say old, you know, it's got to be old. He's been around since there were two steps. Actually, Chuck C was his sponsor. The thing is that we don't talk the way we used to. So I really utilize my OA sponsor the most. And it still are the same steps, and I just know that for me today, and I don't know, you know, here's what I can tell you is that, you know, the people who aren't in those other programs aggrandize AA, and I could say that there's a lot of people in AA who are just not drinking, and that's good enough, but they're not working steps, they're not moving, and they're not growing a lot. I think the people here who've got long-term are very often have a lot more, they're more evolved than people who may have 30 years, but all they've done today is not drink, you know. And they may, you know, my mother was an example of that. For 30 years, she didn't drink, but she stopped going to meetings, she stopped doing any step work or any of that, and I think there's more to it. And so for me, I don't think there's anything special about the dual programs as long as you're really working the steps.
I'd like to speak to that. How does one, you know, if you have more than one program, how do you sponsor someone? And the issue is experience, strength, and hope, nothing more. Doesn't matter how many programs. See, I mean, I've gone through the steps in a whole bunch of different ways, including the 171 inventory questions. I've done that too. But I had a guy just as an experience who was of Spanish descent and just an overeater. And I said, I'm a sober alcoholic, and he had wine with dinner every day. And for a little bit, it was a debate. I said, if you're not an alcoholic, I understand that. I said, I can't make you do it. First of all, nobody can make anybody do anything. But I said, if you're really not an alcoholic, it shouldn't make any difference whether you give up the wine or not. You know. And I said, that's in... you know, keep it clear. And you know what? He gave it up. What they used to tell me, and this is true for any program, when you start to get into debate, there is no, according to step 2 in the AA 12, there's no debate in the spiritual world. So if there's a debate going on, who's running this? That's what I would tell you. So you get to ask, whoever it was that asked the question, you get to ask, what's your experience with this if you're having an issue? And if they don't tell you that, if somebody's not willing to share their experience with you, they're becoming an authority. Of that, we don't have any here. Because the only people who are authorities are people who sort of balloon their way out of the universe or something. So.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Julie Rose, the Folsom Overeater.
Hey, Julie Rose.
When you decided to turn your will and your life over to the care of God or Goddess or it, was that one thought? Or, sorry, I'm out of time.
Oh, I'll take that. Time after time after time,
yeah.
And many times, 15 times during one day. Sure. The question is, when you turn your will and your life over to God, is it a one-time event, or is it repeatedly?
Yeah. Yeah.
15 times a day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's you know, you asked the other lady asked if this is you're committed for a lifetime. It's actually quite fascinating. It, to me, the whole thing is fascinating because you think your problem is food. You think you're going to turn bread, sugar, whatever, over to God. And then there's so much more to it. And that's not to discourage you. That's to just say it's interesting how many things you can turn over to God. And that's not to absolve you of the responsibility to do your part. You have to do your part. But it's like a plant that you keep watering and different flowers grow. And it's fascinating. It's very hard to believe that in the beginning, but to answer your question, I worked the steps specifically probably 8 times in 27 years, but the 1, 2, 3, I go through 55 times a day.
What I would say about that is you left out an important word. We make a decision to turn our will over. So what that tells me, and my spiritual path has been a long one through step 11, but I'm not going to get into details. But the point being, everywhere I've looked, including in our literature, there's in what one religion calls an evil inclination or whatever, or self, or whatever, you know, and versus the other. And one of the things I learned about, you know, from God or is it my head and all that, the way that it was told to me by a spiritual mentor was that God, like the heavens, is very free, and it's that all of a sudden you get a thought, call your mother, what? That's God.
Yeah.
If I'm weighing and measuring in my head, it ain't God, it's my head. Mm-hmm. What I learned is, when I make a decision based on what's in my head, I inevitably cost myself chaos. Because if I'm debating, should I or shouldn't I, that is not God. Okay, I know that. I mean, that I know. Because, like the literature says, we relax, we take it easy. This is on page 86 of the Big Book.
Mm-hmm.
And after we do this a while, what used to be the inspiration of the occasional hunch becomes a way of thinking.
So, take the rest. Yes, go ahead.
First, I'd like to thank all three of you. I just took tons of notes, and it's a privilege to be here. Thank you. My question is, will you please each share what your specific concepts are of your higher power?
Could we share our each specific concept of higher power? I think for me, the most important thing about, and this is a rephrasing of what Ira said before, the most important thing about accepting and having a higher power is accepting that I am a lesser power. And that was, you know, and again, when I came in, I had this wonderful person who said, nobody's ever going to make you believe anything you want to, but by taking that pressure off of me, I was able to come to some belief. And it was funny, when I was younger, I had to figure out what this God was, because I, you know, I'm this deep thinker, and today it's like, it doesn't matter, I just know it's not me. To me, the most important word in the steps is the word only in the 11th step, praying only for knowledge of His will, because like Seppi and Iru were saying, my God was Santa Claus, essentially. I have this list, and if you give it to me, you're God, or if you get me out of this scrape, or help me figure out where I left my car, or any one of a number of things before I came into the program, then I believe it. But now it's like, I don't have to. I just, it's a freeing thing, and it is a sort of an amorphous thing for me, way more than it was earlier. And I use the word God as a placeholder. It really bothered me when I first came in, because I didn't like it, and I tried to do higher power. And it's, for me, it's a three-letter, one-syllable placeholder now. And I think for everybody, it's different. You know, it's like there's this philosophy thing that says we all look at that color and say, oh, that's red. But we may be all seeing it differently. I may be seeing it as blue, and you may be seeing it as purple, and she may be seeing it as green. But we all have made a collective decision to look at that color and say red. And I think that's what happens in OA, is we all have an internal view, but it all points outward. And for me, it's about it not being me.
When you asked that question, the phrase that came to my mind is what I say to myself 50 times a day, more. God's got my back. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means, but I just say God. There are two things I always say. God's got my back. God does for me, not to me. So visually, I picture the traditional grandfather, you know, the whatever is painted in the Sistine Chapel. Visually, I see a very old man with a beard and white beard. As you know, I've had good experience with my grandfather with the males in my family, so that visually I refer to him as the he. But so many things have happened that I don't try to say, God helps me be courageous, God helps me be this. I don't know what the hell he is. He's just got my back. That's the only thing I can say. And I really want to say what I said before. What that means is he's got my back, but I have to do the footwork.
Exactly.
I'm extremely fear-driven, fear-based driven. And as I said before, and Ira, and it seems to be a common thread amongst all of us, we don't want to do our part. And I've heard in many meetings that say, have you asked God if he can do your part for you? I don't know. But God's got my back as long as I do my part. He's right there. He won't let me fall. That's not to say bad things will not happen, but I also know every bad thing that has happened in my life that I've paid attention to in 27 years has miraculously had an amazing end result. So I don't even know what the hell is a bad thing, but God's got my back. That's how I feel.
That's a great question. And on my birthday, which my physical birthday, which is November 30th, and for today it says coincidence is a chant, is a pseudonym. Perhaps coincidence is a pseudonym for God when he didn't want to sign his name. Let me go to step 11. Actually, there is something. Just on step 11 in the beginning of step 11. Okay. In step 11, the AA 12 and 12, to be sure, prayer and meditation are a principal means of conscious contact with God. That's the first line. Then it jumps down to what it talks about in the first paragraph after that is that we use it like when we're in trouble and all that. Then it says, in the second paragraph on page 96 of the AA 12 and 12, it says, to certain newcomers and to those one-time agnostics who still cling to the AA group as their higher power, claims for the power of prayer may, despite all the logic and experience in proof of it, still be unconvincing or quite objectionable. Those of us who once felt this way can certainly understand and sympathize. We well remember how something deep inside us kept rebelling against the ideas of bowing before any God. Many of us had strong logic, too, which proved there was no God, whatever. What about all the accidents, sickness, cruelty, and injustice in the world? What about all those unhappy lives which were the direct result of unfortunate birth and uncontrollable circumstances? Surely there could be no justice in the scheme of things, and therefore no God at all. Sometimes we took a slightly different tack. Sure, we said to ourselves, the hen probably did come before the egg. No doubt the universe had a first cause, quote-unquote, of some sort, the God of the atom, maybe, hot and cold by turns. But certainly there wasn't any evidence of a God who knew or cared about human beings. We liked AA all right, and we're quick to say that it had done miracles. But we recoiled from meditation and prayer as obstinately as the scientist who refused to perform a certain experiment, lest it prove his pet theory wrong. Of course, we finally did experiment, and when unexpected results followed, we felt different. In fact, we knew different. And so we were sold on meditation and prayer, and that, we have found, can happen to anybody who tries. And that, it has been well said that almost the only scoffers at prayer are those who never tried it enough. So the whole, like I said before, the whole thing about God is the first thing is to be convinced, and that's in step one, that I'm not it. I mean, E equals MC squared is God. If you really know what that physical theory is, it makes sense. The best advice I ever got, and I've started to share this, is not so much keep coming back. You know, we hear that constantly. The best advice I ever got was to keep an open mind. Because that's where I made the decision.
And one other thing I'll say is one of the things that popped a bubble that made it a lot easier for me to come to some belief in higher power was an old sponsor said to me once, lose the word why from your vocabulary. Because I come from a family where we had to assign blame to everything. And so he said, lose the word why, because if you get why answered exactly the way you want about something, which is about 0.0001% of the time, if you get it answered the way you want, you're exactly where you started. But if you get it, if it isn't right, then life's unfair, something's unfair, something. And I got thinking about, I had assigned a lot of the why things to God instead of saying, you know, stuff happens and it's not going to be a punitive higher power or whatever. And that helped me then try to come to a better belief in a higher power. So
there's just one other thing, and this helped a lot. I had about 4 years in the program, and I had an uncle visiting me from Israel who was proud of being Jewish and proud of being not in the religion at all. And we're driving around, and he said to me, and he's a great guy. He said, I remember this because I was driving around L.A. while we're having this discussion. He said, if there is a God, how come 6 million Jews have gotten killed? And without batting an eye, I said, God didn't do that. Men did it. See, so that's what changed in me.
Anybody else?
Are we done? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sure.
There is an example of tradition 9, if ever I've seen one.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, folks. I'm so glad you showed up. Thank you very much. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And give a hand to our folks here. It's time for a reading after a moment's meditation. I'm going to ask Victor to read page 99. It's up here.
Page 99?
Francis.
Oh,
Saint
Francis.
Francis. I'll be quiet for just a minute. I need it difficult. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred I may bring love, that where there is wrong I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord I may bring harmony, that where there is error I may bring the truth, and that where there is doubt I may bring faith, that where there is despair I may bring hope, that where there are shadows I may bring light, that where there is sadness I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen.
people that they sponsor, something happened to our list, but, you know, things work out. Ask your sponsor.
Who are you?
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. If you come back, it works if you work it in your work.
Okay, I got so much.
Yeah.